Well, hello everybody. Welcome to the Champions Rugby Show with me, James Burridge. We're looking forward to this one. On today's show, I'm joined by one of the greatest European fly halves. He helped turn Munster into one of the most feared sides in Europe. He lifted the Heineken Champions Cup twice. He's Ireland's highest ever point scorer. He's quite simply a legend of rugby. Ronan O'Gara, thank you so much, Ronan, for joining us on the programme.
Hey, James. Great to be on. Yeah, very excited.
Even listening to that little snapshot of commentary gives you goosebumps. And there have been so many moments associated in European rugby like that. But you're in La Rochelle. We should probably tell the audience as well. It's 6:30 in the morning. So the early bird definitely catches the worm for you. How is life in France and your move there? How are you settling in?
The early bird catches the worm. I like that one. But the second mouse gets the cheese. So it's quite good to come back at people. I think lockdown has probably reshaped my thinking and those kind of things. Before, a lot of people would have been massive fan of first in, last out, and all about a long day's work. But I've kind of come full circle now and essentially trying to be productive in my day as best I can. Because when you think about it, if you're at work, and at work is a crazy word to use because I coach rugby and I love it, and it's between 8 a.m. and 4 a.m. I think you've loads of time to get your message across. It's about me being organized to install a good kind of learning environment for young players and for experienced players to make it most enjoyable. La Rochelle has gone great this season. It's 7 weeks into a kind of a new cycle, got rid of a lot of players and kind of got a few quality signings in, and we've promoted a lot from the academy. So feels like there's a good buzz in the squad, and as we know, team spirit is essential if you want to be successful.
And a lot has happened to you, certainly in a coaching way, because you've obviously been with Racing, then down to the Crusaders, then back up to France again. You've developed very quickly, haven't you, as a coach?
Yeah, you have to, and the game changes quickly, and you have to, I suppose, have a growth mindset, and that's huge, you know, in my thinking. And that was, I suppose, really reinforced the positive capacities with that mindset in the Crusaders. It's a fascinating environment, and first 3-4 months, maybe you were kind of thinking in your head that maybe my way is a little bit better, but they really reshaped my thinking and probably my personality in terms of having that capacity to say, okay, yeah, this actually will work. Because probably my generation and coming from Munster in terms of how I was raised, we've probably been a little bit of a chip on the shoulder, and being the underdog, coming from Ireland and playing England over the years, it was always kind of David nearly against Goliath. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that kind of way of thinking. So yeah, even going from stopping at Munster, going straight to coaching Racing, when you think about it, coaching the first team, it's a huge jump. But I kind of sat out the first six, not sat out, but did kind of a skills role for the first 6 months, and then kind of saw there was an opening as a defence coach and that the boys needed it. So I'm lucky in the fact that the great messages I got passed from coaches I had, I took essentially what I thought was the best from each and every one of them. And I think it's important, you have your own ideas on the game and you believe in your ideas, but you're also open to players' ideas. You kind of discuss, decide, and then you apply, and then you commit to what you want to do, and then if you get buy-in, you can be good.
Now, we're celebrating 25 years of the Heineken Champions Cup. That's the reason for the podcast. Tell me what the competition means to you personally.
It was everything for me. It was everything for Munster supporters, everything from people who love the game of rugby. That was our bread and butter. We didn't have really a domestic league, and that's not having a swipe at the Celtic League or the Pro 14, but for us, we were raised on the European Cup, on the Heineken Cup, on the Champions Cup. It was everything we looked for in a competition, and everything the supporters looked for. And I think during lockdown, we got an opportunity to look back at the games that were replayed. And in fairness to Sky Sports, they did some job in kind of, I suppose, selling Munster and selling what Thomond Park was like. And you know, there was great rapport even with Stuart Barnes, with Miles Harrison. And I think a lot of people from the outside appreciated what Munster did. And we weren't the best side, but I think we were probably the most dogged and determined and probably consistent, because you always want to win. But in life, as you know, you're going to have many downs, and something that I'm particularly proud of with the teammates that I play with. We played in 10 European Cup semi-finals, which is all you can ask for, because it's an easy one for why you stay at Munster all your career. Because if you're competitive, you want your leaders to be loyal, you want them to be hardworking, you want them to show a good way to the younger guys that are coming after you. And that's what you got with Munster, because when you get to that stage, even though you don't get silverware some years, I think you can live with yourself and you can sleep at night because you've given your best effort through preparation, through competitiveness.
We're going to talk about the finals, defeats and victories, but it wasn't just about the semis and the finals of Munster. There were some epic matches in the pool stages. Anyone that's followed rugby in your neck of the woods at Toman Park knows the two that stand out, probably the Gloucester game in 03 and the way it finished against Northampton in 2011.
And James, with that, honestly, it was nearly every December or January when we played an English team in Toman Park. You know, because you look at now, and I understand from if you're a French player or you're an English player, in your calendar, that game in Toman Park is another week because you've Groundhog Day in your domestic championship, because there's such history in the Premiership and such history in the top 14 and winning the Buccleuch that these guys have to perform every single week. While for us, it was Europe, 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 Europe. And you could sense the change in intensity every Monday morning of a European Cup week. It just went up a few gears, and the kind of, I suppose, the pupils in guys' eyes, they were a different shade of colour than they would have been on a Pro 14 week.
But not many gave you a prayer against Gloucester there. I mean, you had to beat what was then England's leading club by 4 clear tries and 27 points to make the knockout stages.
And neither did we. I can remember our mindset under that week. It was completely focused on trying to keep our home record intact. That's the level of respect we had for Gloucester. Everyone is an expert in hindsight with coming up with the points and was it discussed. And, you know, let's not get carried away here. It wasn't. I'm sure the coaching staff had discussed it in their wildest dreams. But, like, if you're thinking of beating a quality-laden side like Gloucester by over, you know, essentially by 30 points, you need your head examined. So we were completely fixed on performance, and that was a good learning for all of us too, because if you get the process right, sometimes the result takes after itself. And if you can get kind of a team under pressure and the crowd in behind you, who knows what happens, and it can just take off. And the beauty of rugby is kind of, you know, as many good English team knew, especially their test team, that it only takes 60 seconds to kind of get 7 points. And if you're clinical, you can obviously, you know, 2 minutes is 14 points in both halves, which essentially comes up at 28 points.
Well, I'd like to be anywhere else, Jim, but in Ron Lagara's shoes now. He has kicked some massive goals for Munster over the last 4 or 5 years.
There's 1 minute to go. It's away, and it's on target, and the flags are up, and Munster have got the lead they wanted. 27 points the difference now. Munster 33, Gloucester 6. Gloucester haven't scored in the second half, and we have, by my reckoning, about 20 seconds of play left.
Well, if you had scripted this, Jim, nobody, but just nobody, would have believed it was possible.
I think he wants to play on, the ref. Looking at his watch, he said 42 minutes, stop, and he has! It's over, and Munster have done the impossible.
Well, it took 41 phases against Northampton, and I was lucky enough to be in Toman Park for that one, and I couldn't quite believe it. Could you quite believe it when the ball was thrown back to you from Leamy, I think it was, and then the drop goal? I mean, probably one of the most unforgettable moments in Munster's European history and the tournament itself.
Yeah, it was everything about the guys you play with, I suppose. Just, it's important for young guys that listen to this podcast too, is that, you know, usually when you think you've this game cracked, you kind of get a kick in the backside, and when you're at your kind of lowest ebb, something breaks for you. You look at periods of that 41 phases, we were going nowhere, but what we had, it was kind of a never-say-die attitude, just keep the ball alive, hoping something would break. And you could see that Dougie made a few imprints on the D at times. Experience tells you, kind of, when you're put in the same situation, that you do it better the next time. So I was kind of in the latter stages of my playing career where it didn't feel right to chance a drop goal. You'll get a time where hopefully you'll be able to execute it. So it kind of, you trust your instincts.
Wood trying to get through. Leamy. Wood has to back. Be careful. There it is. It's all on this. Ronan O'Gara. Oh, what a this competition takes you to new heights year on year. And have we ever seen anything like that? Nick Evans, Harlequins against Stan. Now, Ronan O'Gara, Munster against Northampton. How did they do it?
Also, I think it's worth mentioning the quality of the ball we played was, for ex-players, they'll remember that. I think it was an Adidas ball that we played with. Normally, it's the Gilbert ball is absolutely beautiful as well, because they made different balls for Heineken Cup games, and it made such a difference. And over the years, because I played for, I don't know, was it 15 years in that competition? But the quality of balls we played, from a kicking point of view, they were beautiful to strike. So I knew in that game against Northampton that distance wouldn't be an issue. But you're just kind of concentrating on the strike, and you get a great pass off his kind of so-called weaker side from Leamy, and then you kind of commit to executing a skill. But before that, everyone showed, I suppose, patience, and that's very important in the game too, that you kind of trust in your teammates that you do your job and I'll do my job, and my job essentially is to kick the ball over the bar. And it happened, it just so happened it was in the 83rd minute, and we needed it to get out of jail.
How, though, throughout your career did you deal with expectation? Because whether it was the conversion to beat Gloucester, whether it was scoring points for Ireland to win Grand Slams or drop goals, it's a lonely place being a kicker, isn't it? Being the man who has to get the points.
We saw that in Twickenham in my first final, 0 points, and the biggest disappointment of my career, because I let down. The biggest memory I have from rugby is the teammates I play with. In the Munster dressing room, they were exceptionally special people that I've still in contact with and great friends to this day. And, you know, I mean, the medals are there, but they don't really count anymore. It's the relationships, it's the laughs, it's the suffering we went through together that created a real group. That's, for me, stands out. But Twickenham at 2000 against Northampton, 9-8, and David Wallace got a cry and Jason Holland got a drop goal. I'm the kicker, I don't contribute to the day. A crushing blow, a hammering, disappointing feeling inside.
This is, a moment of history, surely, for Ronan O'Gara, who's done such great work in this tournament, the top scorer with 131 points in this European Cup series. And this, to put his side in the lead, with, I reckon, only about a minute of actual playing time left. The good side for Ronan O'Gara. He kicked a couple from here in practice yesterday. O'Gara then, he stroked it well, it looks pretty good, but it's just past the left hand upright, and it stays at Northampton 9, Munster 8. They've about a minute of actual playing time left.
You've left so many people down and supporters, but that was probably the day I changed from a boy to a man. Not that day, but probably the learnings from that day, should I say. And I remember Keith Wood was very good to me, very, very good, because that was probably the day mentally I had to change from being a kind of a part-time kicker to a Johnny Wilkinson style or performance kicker, in terms of, if you want to take the responsibility of kicking, you want to be having very high averages. So my technique, obviously, up to that wasn't good enough, so I had to change, and I had to change my mental approach. And you hate to be exposed like that in the final, but that's what happened. But, you know, it comes back to the point of pressure, and pressure as kicker, you can see it. Very few people understand it, but I think that's why the top kickers in the world would have a lot of respect for each other, because kicking when you're 11 points up, or where you're 8 points up, or you're 16 points up, it's a different kick. Kicking when you're 2 points down in a final, in a semi-final, at a tricky angle, I think that's how you get respect from your peers. And I remember the words well. He just kind of goes, you have to have a bulletproof technique. And I went away and I worked hard. I got a lot of good people to work with, from a mental point of view and from a kind of a skills execution point of view. So, but as you say, he was a young boy in Twickenham, but I wasn't up to the task. But thankfully, I got a chance to readdress that. But it took 3 years later in the final against Leicester. We didn't win, but I think I kicked 100%. And that's the game within the game, as people talk about. You got to play the collective game, but as a kind of an individual, if you can get yourself right, that what makes the teams better. And I think that's why you kind of have a lot of individual set goals and personal goals, because they know if they hit their goals that the team gets better.
Can I just quickly talk about that, the final against Leicester a couple of years later, the famous hand of back incident? Does that final still rankle with you? Is it the one that got away?
No, I don't think so. Leicester were a really good team, full of, you know, I mean, World Cup winners. That was the spine of the team from Leicester went to England. So they went on to win World Cup. So, no, I think we were there or thereabouts. You know, I think what Neil Back did was a bit of brilliance in terms of people. Some people would say it was cheating. No, I don't agree with that. I think he trusted his instincts to give his team an advantage in terms of, was the referee looking? There was no TMO, I don't think, at that stage. And he played it beautifully.
Oh, dear. It's going to end in controversy. There we go. The slap by Neil Back. The referee didn't see it. The touch judge didn't see it. Leicester protect their six-point lead. That's the end of the Heineken Cup final.
It doesn't come down to one instance also. I think people forget that there's another, you know what I mean, five or six big moments in every game. And obviously it's an 80-minute game. That was the, I suppose, an opportunity for us that we didn't consolidate pressure into points. But that happens in sport. It's tough luck. You get on with it and move on.
Let's talk about the first Heineken Cup triumph then, 2006. A narrow victory against Biarritz, back in Cardiff again. And it was your kick that really was the final blow, which gave you that. Just describe the relief of getting so close before and this time, knowing as a team, as a collective, that you had finally crossed the line.
Yeah, it was huge. It was amazing. I remember walking down onto the pitch that day, and I think the learnings from the other two finals had stood to us. I think in Twickenham, we froze from a kind of a playing point of view. I think the occasion was too much for us. Night before, we kind of have a team meeting that was too emotional, and we didn't cap it there. We didn't transfer from Friday night into Saturday. Leicester were a brilliant team, and we got beaten. I think we lost at the Northampton final. We got beaten by Leicester, but we had a great leader. Obviously, many great leaders has come out of Munster, but one of the greatest would have been Paulie, and I just remember him just talking very calmly, walking onto the pitch. We got to play, boys. We got to play. We were very calm going on that day. And, you know, we knew in our heads too that if you want to be taken very seriously, as at that stage we were one of the top teams in Europe, but if you want to be considered the best, you got to win silverware. And that's what we did that day. But it went pear-shaped when Biarritz scored nearly in the first 3 minutes. Bobo down in the left-hand corner, and then Yashvili nailed the conversion. So already you're 7-0 down in your third final. You're kind of going, oh no, it's not meant to be, is it? But we refocused and got back into the game, and it was obviously a very tight game, but as you say, it was relief. It was massive relief, James.
String of checks with O'Gara. They know. Penalty. It's over. It is the easiest kick out. Stringer! And it's the whistle. That means ecstasy for Munster. And now the words that they never stopped believing would one day be said. Munster champions of Europe.
We needed that, but from that it gave us confidence, and we had a shock in 2007, but managed to kind of regroup and refocus and do the business in 08 as well.
Well, that was also, I mean, that was another French team in Toulouse that time, just a 3-point deficit, 16-13. Cardiff was a special place for you, wasn't it? I mean, that you painted the, every time you went there, you painted the stadium red with your travelling army of fans. But I suppose once you'd won it once, it's that theory which so many professional sportsmen and women talk about, isn't it? It's the muscle memory of knowing what you have to do on the big occasion.
Yeah, but it also gives you an incredible taste, because otherwise you're reading about other people that have done stuff. And it's the same message I say to kind of young coaches or people, if you want to find out about the Crusaders or any other club, really going to a place on personal development for a week, you get 5% of it. You got to go experience and taste these places, warts and all, and get in there and roll up your sleeves. And I think that's very important. It's the same when you win something, you know how it feels. You're not asking someone for their feelings about it. And when you get to taste that yourself, I think it becomes something you get attracted to and you get really driven to, and it becomes overpowering sometimes. And that's why a lot of sports people become obsessive, and potentially I fall into that category at times, and I need to pull myself back, because that feeling becomes so good that you find it hard to get it anywhere else. And it was incredible kind of going from 06 to that we had a World Cup in 07 that completely underperformed, and you question your capacity. Can you do it? Because I do believe a week in sport is a long time and it changes very quickly. So you need to be constantly evolving and constantly trying to get better every day. And to kind of come back then and actually win it in 08 was hugely, hugely satisfying.
And it's the tap to count down the seconds. Munster, who always know what to do. And it's all over. And it's Munster over that line again. And now the one they have crossed for a second time in three seasons.
Can I talk about your partnership with Peter Stringer as well? Because that was absolutely fundamental to Munster's success, to Ireland's success. And it was his try in the Biarritz final, which was so pivotal. Tell me what the two of you were like. Because if one of you didn't click, then both Ireland and Munster could suffer for it. But when you were on song, you guys were invincible.
It's a strange one, in the fact that there wasn't actually much planning or discussion between us. On the pitch, very, very close. Off the pitch, kind of just kept apart. It was potentially we saw a lot of each other starting at 8 years of age and going to the same school. But I was a year older than Peter, and but there was a great relationship on the pitch, and it was a great understanding between each other. And he knew exactly how I liked the ball and when I needed the ball, and I knew I was going to get the ball. So, you know, in terms of that relationship, it was very instinctive, I would think. But there was, I think, great respect there in the end. We weren't tight off the pitch, but that's not necessarily important to be successful on the pitch. We challenged each other in training every day. I think we got the best out of each other. And
you had a kiss and make up policy. From what I read, Ronan, is that so you could have your scraps with them as well as be best mates with each other?
Yeah, but I'd say if I was kind of so ratty with a lot of people, I don't think my spats with Strings counted as kicks and makes up. The forwards wouldn't consider our little fights as real fights. The kiss and makes up were genuine spats, I suppose, among the forwards at the time. But yeah, it was a great policy, because obviously I think a different animal comes out in people when you cross the kind of the white line to go training, and that's acceptable if temper's frayed there. But it's important then that your behaviour change when you get back to the dressing room, or you get back to the canteen, or you get back to your own environment. But I think in Munster it was brilliant. When we were on, we were really on. It was competitive, and it was strained at time, but there was always great respect among the players. So, you know, I mean, nothing was left to kind of simmer. It was kind of nip it in the bud. Okay, get on with it. And I think that worked really well over the years.
And with Paul O'Connell as well, you had some absolute rugby colossuses, didn't you, in that team? Tell me what it was like to be led by Paul.
Yeah, I loved playing with Paul. It was obviously from playing with him all my career, and then when Paul was captain of the Lions in 09, it was just such a disappointment for me to kind of in that second test for the way to go with Paul as captain. It would be nothing better kind of for the two of us to have that moment if it was successful, but that's the way it goes. And I was just so disappointed that I let Paul down on that occasion. But also, yeah, I worked with him every day. I know him inside out. He's a deep thinker on the game. He's very, very smart in some of the ideas he comes up with. Perception of Paul being a madman in the times of manic and aggression and violence and what ways you want to play the game. But he was very, very thoughtful. He was very caring. He was an exceptionally decent man and still is. But I think he encompassed, I suppose, a lot of range of emotions in his captaincy and in his leadership, and a fascinating guy.
Now, you scored, over 1,000 points in the Heineken Cup. I think in May 2010, you were awarded the ERC European Player Award, crediting you as the player who had made the greatest contribution to European rugby during the first 15 years of the Heineken Cup. Now, it's an individual award, but was it a proud achievement for you after everything you'd given Munster?
Of course, and it's very selfish of me to say, but unless I'm driven to be the best, why play the game in that regard? Because, you know, individual awards, they don't count for anything, because it's a team sport and you have to have team first policy. And I almost had that, but you have to have a kind of a killer mindset that you want to be the best in your position. You want to be the best and in that competition. And I suppose that's why you kind of set individual goals and goal setting, because you want to be the best you can. And you kind of afterwards, at the time, you're kind of in your bubble. But when you hear it now, with the people that have played in that competition, it's an astounding achievement. And I'm not talking myself up here, but wow, you consider all the legends that played in that competition, and you get that for my first 10 years in playing for Munster. It's something that obviously you'd never forget.
And let's rewind the clock, Ronan. If there was one Heineken Champions Cup moment that you'd want to relive, what would it be?
Oh, it's too hard, James. It's way too hard. You kind of...
There are so many moments, aren't there, really?
Well, exactly. And every year there were so many moments. We had only 3 home games in Thomond Park with 3 away games in pool stages. Then you knew, okay, we got to get to quarters, semi and finals. You know, I mean, as I said, we played in 10 semi-finals. But it's just the journey of the European Cup that I enjoyed so much. Every pre-season, you sweated and you push your body to a place that it's never seen before. But with that comes joy. When you're doing it, it's suffering. But that's the capacity of, I suppose, the human mind and the human body is pushing it to places you don't think you can get. And that's why I'm kind of trying to convince my players here that you don't know where your limit is. None of us do. But you have a chance of achieving it if you have a growth mindset and you're willing to kind of sacrifice, but you're also willing to accept that there will be hardship along the way. But that for me, for the message for young guys listening to this would be that rugby gives you everything. It gives you so much. I think you've got to be prepared for setbacks and you've got to be, it's not smooth sailing. It never will be at the highest of levels. You're going to have crushing defeats and disappointments and question yourself whether you're up to it. But I challenge guys and I hope they'll hang in there and keep going. And you too can have feelings like the Munster team that I played and had. And, you know, it's not the medals, it's the relationships with people that really, really make the difference for me.
And let's just quickly wrap things up by focusing on La Rochelle now, which is where you are, where we're talking to you now. What do you hope you can produce for them? What are the hopes and aspirations for La Rochelle in Europe?
Well, at the minute in Europe, it's a little bit off the radar. What we have at the minute is we're trying to create a real group. We kind of have between Espoirs, Academy players, and the main group, we've kind of 45 players. So we're seeing exactly, can the young guys step up and can they make a kind of a dent on the first team? And I'm sure they can, and they most definitely will. But before you kind of even think of silver, where you got to create a group, we're in the process of doing that, but it's a little bit more difficult than you think, because you're trying to unite people from all around the world with different kind of backgrounds and with different motivations. So without even talking about the sporting side, we need to kind of, I suppose, create our vision, and that's what we're trying to do. And if we can get buy-in from the players, we'll have a chance. If we don't, it's going to be difficult.
We asked Saria McGeegan which player he'd love to coach right now, and he said Finn Russell. Which player would you love to coach right now?
Oh, I'd like to take a lot of them. There's a lot of outstanding guys playing the game. I know from Ireland that you have to admire what Leinster are doing. There's an awful lot of good things going on in that club. From talking to Will Skelton, you'd like to probably get a sit-down with Owen Farrell or Mario Toje. I'd like to kind of rattle their brain for a little bit and see how they see the game, because we're all, no matter what age you are, there's always things you can learn and get better at, and that's my approach to everything. There's some incredible players playing the game, though, that you'd love to coach also.
Finally, Ronan, what do you think your Heineken Cup legacy is?
I think that the legacy would be that it was probably the greatest supported club team of all time in rugby. That speaks volumes for me, that we had a team that people believed in, people paid money to go and watch, people cried over, people cried with tears over, with joy. You'd like to think it represented the people of Munster, what the boys in red did every Saturday. So for me, that was the most important thing. We gave people from the Munster area something to believe in.
Ronan, that's fantastic. It's been wonderful listening to all of this. We could have kept the tape rolling a good couple of hours, but time is of the essence for you right now, certainly from a La Rochelle perspective, and we're grateful for your time. Yeah, good luck in France, and thanks very much indeed for joining us on the show.
Thank you. Love the cheers. Bye-bye.
Wow, what a listen that was. Really, really special having Ronan O'Gara with us. Just hearing about the power of relationships in rugby, and if you're a youngster at La Rochelle, whichever team he's been coaching or is set to coach in the future, my goodness, you are going to play your heart out for that guy, aren't you? Ronan O'Gara, one of the biggest names, not just in European rugby, but in the global game, and it's been fabulous having him on the show. Please subscribe, rate and review the podcast. We've got another European hero coming up shortly to tell you their story. But until then, it's goodbye.